afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. This will be the decaf hour, because subject matter is going to be stressful. Just warning you, but important, super important. And if you don't live in California, it's coming for you anyway. And you know, maybe you don't care about oil and gas. Maybe you live in a hut somewhere and you're not going to need that. And you don't care about fossil fuels. Well, you know what? Gavin Newsom might be your next president, so you should care about it for that reason. I'm always building a reason to care, right? So first I need to check, who do we have on the line with us?
You should have everyone.
Oh.
I hope. We'll find out. The professor was not on, but they called him, so.
But they called him. Okay. So you're going to hear voices. Well, not the ones that, never mind. I was going to overshare there for a second. we've been dealing with a sick relative, and there have been some voices. Mike Ariza, he's a U.S. Navy veteran with over 20 years of experience in the refining industry. His experience extends from Chevron Refinery in Richmond, California, the Flying J Refinery in Bakersfield, and the Valero Refinery in Benicia. Mike held the positions of number one controller board operator at Flying J and senior refinery control board supervisor in Valero. I'm shortening the bios. You can read all about it. We created a website just for these guys, or a web address, I should say, at gascrisis.org. And we have all of the previous interviews, most of the paperwork that we're going to talk about, any of the letters we referenced, they will all be at gascrisis.org for you. Stan Ellis is an assemblyman. He is a farmer, a local businessman, a community member with deep roots in the Central Valley. Growing up on a hog farm in South Dakota, he worked to put himself through college at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. Graduated with a degree in mathematics. Just for reference, my degree was in English, so we won't be doing any mathematics with Stan today. He settled in Kern County, where he began an extensive entrepreneurial career. And he also, just in his free time, started a quantum physics lab that includes innovations in quantum communication, quantum networking, and the development of revolutionary medical research treatment using quantum entanglement. We won't be talking about that either.
Or quantum leaping.
And we're quantum out on a limb. And I would like Mr. Ellis to come on actually and decode that for us, because I have read that bio several times. I still don't actually know what it means. And Professor Michael Michet is an associate professor in the practice of management and organization. He's widely sought for his independent and objective perspective, exceptional consulting acumen, boardroom skills, and direct Socratic data-driven client-centric style. Quite a sentence of addressing highly complex and critical strategic organizational and operational and positioning issues. He's at USC. So bottom line is, we got the guys, right? We always call them everybody refers to you as the gas guys, by the way. So, gas guys, where would you like to go? I know we've had some executive orders and some stuff, but today the update is driven by you. Who's going to be the ringleader? They're in the code of silence.
I think Mike Ariza and Professor Mish and all three of us have actually been running in a little different circles, which cumulatively, we kind of pretty well have it covered. So, Professor, you're great at recapping. I think it would be great if you maybe let us off.
Recap away. Let
me show
you.
Oh, there he is. Right on cue.
Yeah. Good to see you. Good to hear you again. How are you today?
Hi, we're good. Stan just said that you're good at recapping, so we should have you do it, and then ping, you, there you were.
There we are. Yep. Anyway.
So maybe you could give us the kind of the view from where we are now. We started this journey with you guys in December, and here we are in April. What does it look like from your vantage point?
Well, I guess I can start.
We already voted on that.
Okay. That's good to know. Look, you know, we're in a precarious situation as far as California is concerned. We have a diminishing supply of gasoline and jet fuel. We have limited supplies of gasoline and jet fuel far below our consumption being produced in the state and also being imported. So we'll probably have a relatively significant imbalance between supply and demand coming around mid-May. And so we think, and we being James Rector, myself, and Joseph Sylvia, we ran our models. So we think we're looking at, supply shortages commencing, beginning to sort of present themselves in mid-May, accelerating to the end of May, with appropriate price increases. And the price increases are sort of a double whammy, because you're going to have price increases associated with limited supplies and price increases associated with the normal California, oh, it's July 1st, I'm going to tax and fee the hell out of you through your gasoline consumption. So that occurs naturally. But those regulatory increases will be exacerbated by supply issues. And so unless something dramatically changes in the next few days in the Middle East with Iran, I think we're looking at, the possibility of supply issues and rationing, perhaps. God forbid we might even have outages.
Well, I just heard a report yesterday that I forget which airline it was, but they're reporting shortages of jet fuel already, and that some of their flights may be consolidated and delayed.
Well, I also heard that the UK only has a couple of days of jet fuel left. Is that right?
The UK has probably 9 to 14 days, maybe. They don't have much. EU doesn't have much. And then there was Australia only has two refineries. One caught on fire, and it has sustained significant damage. So the refineries that service California are India and South Korea. Even under best conditions now, with that refinery being burned down, Australia is going to be drawing a lot of gasoline production and jet fuel production that would have gone to California will be diverted to Australia now. So that exasperates our supply situation even further. So we're seeing this Australia, New Zealand, the UK, the Philippines. We're seeing those countries that were heavily reliant on imports starting to really show the stress of that. Mm-hmm. And that's a major issue for anybody.
Right. And did before the refinery shut down, did they actually export fuel?
In Australia?
No, in California.
No. No, we never really exported much fuel in the 20th century. I mean, we did up until, we were the world's largest producer and exporter of crude oil in the world for a while. And then, of course, that went away. But our refineries are set up for California oil. Is a closed-loop system. So in other words, we had the oil here in the reserves. We produced the oil, and that oil went to the refineries, which were technically configured to take the California oil, and it was closed-loop. We made it, we produced it, we consumed it. The oil that we did export predominantly went to Nevada and to Arizona.
Okay.
So the gasoline that we did export went to Nevada and it went to Arizona. 80+% of Nevada's gasoline is provided by California. About 38 to 40% of Arizona gasoline is provided by California. They are looking at severe cutbacks. Also, as California reduces its refinery output, that will have a corresponding impact on Nevada and Arizona.
And how do they determine the priority of where what little jet fuel and gasoline we're producing now? How do they come up with a priority of who's going to get it? Because it sounds like Arizona, Nevada are going to be putting a heavy hand on California, and California is going to come up short. I don't know how that works.
Well, no, it doesn't quite work like that. Both the governors of Arizona and Nevada have contacted Governor Newsom. Their first letter was, way back in 2024, when Newsom was talking about ABX 2-1, which was the refinery inventory, where that bill requires refiners to keep X number of days of finished fuel on inventory. And the refiners said, if you pass it, it's going to cost a lot of money and we may leave. And Phillips 66 did leave as a result of that. Within, I think it was within 48 hours of passing the legislation, Phillips 66 closed down the Southern California plant refinery. But so they sent letters. The first set of letters were dismissed by Governor Newsom. He literally just thumbed his nose at him and said, you know, you're just parroting big oil. And, you know, you're suffering the fact that you're not a leader in climate change, and California is a leader in climate change, and, you know, you can solve this by buying EVs. That was basically his response. Wow. But it was really a thumb your nose at it. And then there's been subsequent letters. But California really can't do anything, because at this point, California is down 22% of its in-state production capacity. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have any surplus production capacity. So, you know, Arizona, they're getting, you know, 60% of their fuel in from Texas. That they're in a little bit better shape. Nevada's the one that's hurting the most. So what happens in California has a direct and obviously detrimental effect on Nevada. Mm-hmm. So the way that it'll be prioritized is a matter, I think, well, that's where you begin to invoke issues of national security and issues of economic vitality, and you invoke the Defense Production Act, and you allocate fuel production based on it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Where does the shortfall of jet fuel, where is that going to come from?
Well, it's been made up from South Korea and India. Matter of fact, South Korea was California's number one provider of jet fuel in 2024 and I believe 2025. So it provided a tremendous amount of jet fuel into California.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with those Korean refineries running at diminished capacity because they get their crude oil from the Middle East.
Right.
So South Korea gets the majority of its crude from the Middle East and some from, believe it or not, the United States. India, which was the secondary source of California jet fuel from Indo-Asia, the majority of their oil comes from the Middle East and from Russia. But both India and South Korea are operating at significantly diminished capacities now because of the reduction in the feedstock that comes in from, you know, the oil feedstock that comes in from the Middle East.
Right.
So California is facing a critical shortage of jet fuel. And that's why the jet fuel prices, particularly in PADD 5, which is the Petroleum Administration Defense District that we live in, California, the prices of jet fuel have literally tripled.
So with these executive orders that Trump put through, are they going to have any impact on the production of jet fuel in California?
Well, he hasn't signed those. He only signed the executive order, and that was to allow for the production of oil by Sable Offshore Oil Corporation, which has their platforms in federal waters off the coast of California, to produce and use the California, you know, use the pipeline system to bring it in. And they're producing, they began their production at 20,000, they're ramping up to 30, and ultimately they'll end up at 50,000 barrels a day. That 50,000 would represent 17% of all in-state production, so it's a considerable amount of production.
Mm-hmm.
However, true to form, Governor Newsom sued to stop the production in federal district court with Attorney General Banta, and that trial is scheduled, I believe, for either late May or early June. And so we'll see what happens there. And then the second lawsuit was filed in Santa Barbara Superior Court, which we all knew that one wasn't going to really go too far. And so that judgment said, well, you know, you're in Sable, you're in violation of California provisions, blah, blah, blah. You're not allowed to produce. You shouldn't produce. We're going to fine you to produce. But then Sable turned around and says, well, I'm following, you know, we're following the executive orders of the United States president. He told us to produce. So you can see the legal conflict that
who's the boss, right?
Ostensibly, yeah, by California. You know, I mean, but I think it's very clear to me, based on my experience in March with the legislature and what I see with these court filings and these lawsuits, California does not want production of state.
No.
And it's questionable whether they want the refineries in their state. I mean, the new cap and investment, yeah, they conceded a bit on the proposed amendments, but it's still going to add to the cost of gasoline at the pump for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Still increasing the price. And you know, I was in Sacramento on March 18th to support Senator Terry Strickland's SB 1035 bill. And that was a simple bill. It was really a simple bill. It said, look, you have three taxes and fees. You have the state excise tax, the low carbon fuel standard, and cap and trade, which is the governor now calls cap and invest. And collectively, they add to $1.08 a gallon. So the bill was real simple. Pick a time period, 30 days, 90 days, 6 months, a year. Pick a time period. Roll them back. Suspend them. Don't revoke them. Don't repeal them. Just suspend them. And collectively, that would have been $1.08 a gallon. Not one Democrat on that committee asked me a question about that. Not one.
That tells you something.
It tells you pretty much a lot of what a lot of things Californians should know. And the committee chairwoman, you know, just came out and she said, well, I'm not going to vote for this, even before she took the vote. Her statement was, I'm not voting for this. And they predicated a lot of their analysis on a February 11th paper that was written by somebody who obviously didn't have a background in oil and gas, didn't have a background in oil and gas economics, never worked in a refinery, and never worked on an oil rig. There were material errors in that paper. And I thought, well, somebody's going to ask me about this, right? Nope. Nobody asked me about it.
Nope, it's gospel.
Wow.
Yeah, nobody asked me about it. So I walked out of there saying to myself, it's very clear they don't want to reduce prices. They're not really interested in keeping these refineries going other than for political purposes. And they don't want oil production in the state of California. Now, they can argue, oh, we passed SB 237. Big deal. That's 2,000 permits. How many oil wells have been drilled so far?
I'm going to guess.
A handful.
Okay.
Yeah, 100. A handful.
It's a handful. I mean, they got like 300 permits that were issued. I'm not sure what the production is. And even so, if you brought up all those wells under 237, you still wouldn't equal what's offshore and what's in Los Angeles County and what's in Ventura County that you could bring up if you allowed production in those counties. So this is the dilemma that California finds itself in. And it was very clear, and you know, I'm sure people will argue with me and disagree with me, and we're allowed to do that as respectfully as in a democratic society. We're in a republic. But it was very clear to me that they just weren't interested in this. They weren't interested at all. And so, in light of the fact that these have profound national security issues associated with them, like how do you get fuel to the airports, the Air Force bases in Nevada now?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get all the fuel that's necessary? We don't have, and it is public information if you do the research, but we don't have sufficient fueling bases in the Pacific Ocean to fully sustain and prosecute any military combat operations over there for any length of time. The whole system was predicated on, don't worry, we got plenty of oil and plenty of refineries in California. We'll just tell them to jack up their production of jet fuel and diesel fuel, and we'll be able to supply the fleet and naval and air force operations and marine operations in the Pacific from here. Well, guess what? You don't have that anymore. It's rapidly going away.
Wow.
And then you look at what Phillips did with their Rodeo facility up in Northern California. They converted that to renewables. The thing is absolutely losing money. It's in their financial statements. It's in their SEC reports. The governor tried to finagle a deal where they would divert part of the state excise tax to what's called a sustainable air fuel credit and provide that credit to Phillips to help mitigate some of their financial losses. You know, that would have increased the price of gasoline 7-8 cents a gallon in the state of California, not to mention the amount of money that was taken out of the state excise tax, which goes directly by legislative mandate. That tax that's collected, that 62 cents a gallon, is supposed to go directly to California roads and streets.
Oh.
Yeah, but doesn't that tax go into the general fund?
No. The state excise tax is directed directly to roads and streets in California.
All right.
Okay. It was set up specifically for that. In 2015, 2016, there was a vote. And a state vote, and the voters voted for it. They voted to uphold it and to make that change. And they brought that out in the hearing. Oh, the voters love this. And I said, well, yeah, look at the price of gas in 2015 and look at the price of gas today. Would they vote for this today? Yeah. That's what you have to ask yourself. Is this the right policy today?
Yeah.
And, of course, when I began talking about the prices, I was interrupted by the chairperson, and it's like, she didn't want to talk about the prices. But fortunately, there was a Republican senator. She goes, well, this whole committee is about the prices. Let them talk. And I said, they're going up. Mm-hmm. And you're contributing to it. And here's the numbers. And we broke it out. And then the argument was, it's Trump's numbers. It's Trump's numbers. It's Trump's war. And I said, no, the base number I used for this was 2025. It was not 2026.
Right. Had nothing to
do with it. War has nothing to do with this base number, right? Yeah. And so we showed it, or Senator Strickland showed it, but nobody was interested in exploring it. Nobody was even interested in discussing it. The only questions that were asked by the sole Republican senator on that committee. And so you sort of walk out of there and you look, and you say to yourself, they're not interested in reducing the prices for people in California at all. And you see it in the other legislative actions and the lawsuits that have been initiated here. So I think for California, and this was my stated, statement in Washington, the only way California is going to find its way out of this mess is through President Trump has to fix it.
Yeah. We need to talk about that part. Can we take a really fast break? I know, Professor, you're on a tight time frame, and so if you have to escape, we will forgive you because we'll force you to come back with us on a different day. But we've got to take.
If you'll have me here, and I'll hang around a little bit.
Okay, I've got two fun songs for you. I'm going to ply you with music. All right.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
You can bribe me with that.
We're chatting with the gas guys about the state of affairs here in California. You can find everything at gascrisis.org on WeThePeopleRadio.us.
When the lights go out and you throw yourself about in the darkness where you learn to see. Do bad things, do it like it's nothing. Being bad,
You won't see it coming. What you said, I've been thinking of doing bad things to you.
I'm just guessing, but I think that's probably what the governor listens to on his way to work every morning.
Not a chance.
No, I think he more listens to maybe the wheels on the bus go round and round.
There's that. Oh, man. So could we swerve into the executive order lane? I know you had some proposals that you folks worked on. Where are we with all of that, and are they possible, and are they sustainable, you know, in a way that makes the refineries go, ooh, I think I'll stay?
Well, we designed seven orders, of which one had already been acted upon. The first one was the offshore production in federal waters off the shores of Santa Barbara County, and that was for Sable Offshore Company, and the president moved on that. He invoked the Defense Production Act. He instructed Secretary Wright to issue that order. Secretary Wright issued the order, and Sable's producing, and then, you know, he had the lawsuits filed. But there are six others that follow that, and they're designed to provide a very comprehensive approach to oil and gas management in the state of California. They're not designed to do a one-off thing or a onesie-twosie thing like, you know, like SB 237 was designed to do. It was a one-off. It's really not going to accomplish too much, but it's at least a step in the right direction. The executive orders that we designed were quite comprehensive, and they provide, if you will, the architecture for managing California oil and gas resources well into the future. And they include things like increasing onshore production in certain designated counties. We're working on the details for that right now. There's an order to create a federal oversight organization that would oversee California oil and gas production because of its immediacy and importance to national security. The idea would be to, you know, really diminish some of these harmful pieces of legislation. And again, I use harmful in the sense that they impede production and they work to accelerate the exit of the refineries from California. And, you know, it's still somewhat foreign to me that, you know, you have 8% of your GDP based on oil and gas. It's the first 8% of your GDP, and you've declared war on it without having anything in place to replace the 8% that you've just declared war on. And so, you know, that logic is just, it escapes most people that have a rational mind. And so these executive orders that were drafted, they're just the architecture for the orders. They're in D.C. I know that they've been discussed, and we'll see what where the administration goes with them.
And do they have a high likelihood, like everything else, of just falling prey to, you know, mindless lawsuits because orange man bad?
Well, I think once you get through this first sort of wave of lawsuits on that first executive order.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really comment on any of that.
Have you stayed at a Holiday Inn Express?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't really can't comment on any of that stuff, right? I'm not a lawyer, and whatever I say, you know, I'm not a lawyer. So, you know, what the hell do I know? But I will say this. If you study sort of the legal history of executive orders related to the Defense Production Act, they do tend to prevail in court. In other words, they have significant survivability. And, you know, if Joe Biden can invoke the National Defense Production Act and issue an executive order for solar panels, then if anything, you should be able to defend this one and invoke this one and withstand a lot of the legal tests. I know one of the absurd arguments that were created by the state in its lawsuit against the administration was that, well, if you bring Sable up, it's less than 1% of U.S. oil, so it doesn't really matter, and who cares? I mean, that was really what the essence of their statement. And again, I think from a Californian, I mean, if I divide U.S. production into Sable production, it's less than 1%. You got that. Congratulations. You mastered third-grade arithmetic. Congratulations.
Yeah.
The point is you've missed a much more important subject, and that is the U.S. doesn't take any California oil. It's not significant to the United States. But because you have no pipelines coming into California, you are completely dependent on either California production, but now on foreign production. And see how that's working out for you now with the Straits of Hormuz closed. That's the point. And it was startling that they would predicate a significant part of their argument on third-grade arithmetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Nationally has nothing to do with what's happening in California.
Yeah.
Production wise.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So you know, but they tend to survive. I mean, look, it was codified in 1950. It was a result of World War II. But you know, the president, formally or informally, has been directing industry to produce stuff in times of war, going back to the Civil War, back to the Abraham Lincoln's administration. You know, after the startling results of World War II, and what I mean by that was how quickly the United States industry pivoted from a peacetime to a wartime economy, it became very apparent, you should have a Defense Production Act, and the president should have these qualities, right, and these capabilities. And so Congress enacted that, and so there it is. So we'll see what the courts say on it. But I, you know, my layperson's feeling on this, and again, I'll emphasize layperson, not knowing much about the law, it's probably going to prevail. Certainly the 21-page opinion letter that the Department of Justice wrote in advance of the executive order being issued was well-reasoned and well-documented with good law. The fact that California, you know, Sable produces 1% of U.S. oil is completely not an issue. It doesn't matter what California produces. California could produce hundreds of millions of barrels of oil, and it's still not going to the rest of the United States, all right, because it doesn't go there. We use it here. We need it here. And over the years, we went from being self-sufficient to importing over 60% of our oil and now over 40% of our fuels for jet and cars. And if you look at the refineries, they won't tell you publicly, but they're going to tell you privately, supplies are very tight right now.
I guess every time we all convene, I walk away going, how do they not see this? But I guess that's just the wrong question.
Well, it's the right question. The problem is when you ask it, the people that should be able to answer it can't. That's the issue.
Yeah, or won't.
Or they flat out lie about it.
Yeah,
or flat out won't. But I mean, that's the issue. Okay, they're either incapable or unwilling to answer that question, because the answer is not very convenient, and it's contradictory to the longstanding narrative. And that's what we see, and that's California, you know. And so recently, I can tell you this. So I know that the governor's office was contacted last week. I think it was on Tuesday or Wednesday. And the person who contacted them asked the governor's office how many days' supply of fuel, gasoline, did California have? Now, I wasn't on the call, but this is all the person telling me. The governor's office said California had 60 days of gasoline on supply. it's impossible.
Yeah, that's that sounds like a lot of gas.
Countries do not have 60 days of supply of gasoline on hand, let alone a state. California has averaged around 14 to 16 days supply of gasoline and around 14 days to 17 days supply of crude oil. Now, maybe they're adding them together, and, you know, when you got 960s on your SAT score, you don't end up with 28 or 30, you end up with 60. I can see how that happens. But California has never had 60 days of fuel ever. Then, interesting, just a few days later, the CEC came out and said 30 days of supplies. Mm. They didn't say gasoline. They said supplies.
Right.
Oh.
So,
way to shade.
Does that mean it's gasoline, or is it gasoline plus crude stock? When they were questioned, they wouldn't tell us what they really meant by it. In other words, they wouldn't disclose their data, their math, or their assumptions.
I'm sorry, what was left? Their shoe size?
Yeah, their assumptions, right? So they wouldn't disclose that. So we don't know how they came up with that estimate. But we, on the other hand, looked at how many tankers were moving, where the tankers were coming from, what they were loaded up with, average transit time. If you ordered gasoline today from India, let's just suppose the India refinery was running and it was producing at its capacity, and you could buy California gasoline from them today. Because remember, you can only buy, you got to use California blend. You can't use reformulated gas in this state. It's got to be California special blend because we're special. And if you bought that today in India, it's the 19th of April. You wouldn't see that gasoline in the pump at the consumer level until the first or second week of June.
Hmm. Wow.
So basically you're looking at a month away once the order's filled.
It's more than that, because you got to get it onto the ship, sail it across the Pacific at about 12.5 knots, and then you got to wait in our harbors because our ports are at capacity. So our anchorage time has actually gone up a bit. So you're sitting there idle, waiting for your berthing time, and then you finally get in. Then you got to unload it. Then it's got to go to a distributor. Then it's got to go on a truck. And then finally gets to our gas station.
Yeah.
So the process can be 50, 60 days before you see it at the pump. So we calculated that California probably has right now, based on all the data we had, which was pretty interesting. I'm getting to that in a second. 90 days of immediate supply. That's gasoline right now. That they, you know, if everything's
hold
stopped,
on,
you
hold on one second. That got garbled, but we've got to. I sort of made it so that all our brakes got jammed in one spot. Got to take one more quick break, okay. And then we'll come back. But I want to do that number again because the signal broke. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Who is it? Nothing's gonna get to me, but then again it might. What can I do to keep from going crazy in the night?
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Maybe we could get the Talking Heads to add something about gas lines to that song. They've got a pretty good list going so far. So go back to the stat you were quoting, please, on the volume.
So, right, the volume. So James Rector and I and Joseph of Sylvia, our graduate assistant, calculated just last week, based on all the EIA data we could get, along with transit data and maritime shipping data and what we knew about the refineries in South Korea and India in particular, calculated that California probably has about 9-10 days supply of gasoline immediately on hand. And then you have about another, 9 to 10 days, 15 days of what we call in transit or in process.
Right. That's what I was going to ask.
It's fuel that's coming over. Right. It's fuel that's coming over. It's not coming over in the quantities that it once was coming over, so we had to make adjustments for that. And then we went back and said, well, how much are the refineries producing? And so we looked at South Korea, and their production is down considerably. We looked at India. Their production is down considerably, and we said, all right, well, all things being equal, how much of that production would be coming to California? And so we factored that in. And when we factored all of that in, we began to see stress occurring because demand's not abating, right? Demand's current. So we began to see the stress beginning to really manifest itself around the middle of May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's barring any complications between now and then, like a total shutdown of oil flow to India or South Korea.
Right.
I mean,
right.
we're kind of a razor's edge as far as...
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We are. Our gasoline levels are pretty close to five-year lows. They're about 10-20% below historical norms. And then when we adjust for the reduction in imports and the refinery output of India and South Korea, our models indicate that our inventories are pretty close to 25-30% below normal right now. And so what that means is, you know, unless something, the event has already happened. So what it means is the following. The event has already happened. California has not felt the full effect of it yet.
Right.
Well, and if they
demand.
Say that again.
And demand's going to increase, and we're going into our summer blend, which with what our refineries are running at right now, they will be making less.
Right.
Right when this hits us, our demand typically starts going up. We head into the Memorial Day. The holiday and into the summer, so demand's going to increase, and the summer blend's going to decrease the amount of volume of gasoline produced in the state on top of how much it's already been reduced.
So we think that sometime over the next 25 days, which would be between now and the middle of May, we'll start seeing gasoline imports drop sharply. I mean, through the floor. Even if the straits open up tomorrow, you'll still have that because the event has already happened. It's just we haven't felt it yet. It's a lagging effect. And then you marry that with our crude oil decline in our in-state production. It's not a very rosy picture for the state.
understand.
Just absolutely crazy. And there's no indication that the legislature or the governor or anybody who has their finger on any buttons there will back off on the summer blend and the California secret sauce of gas and all that stuff to give us supply, right?
Well, keep in mind the governor's unofficial statement was we have 60 days supply. So
exactly.
You know, apparently, you know, he knows more than the rest of the world. you know, so you
it's
know,
fun to be delusional.
You live in your own world, and you know that's what you get, right? But you know, the data indicates this type of trajectory, and you know, the E15 blend under AB30, that's not going to provide any solution to this. Okay, that's just a sideshow too. So our recommendation was, given this, you might want to consider again in the short term. Could be for 30 days, 90 days, short term. Suspend the LCSF blend. Start, you know, make it so that you can bring in, you know, the standard reformulated blend of gasoline that's used across the rest of the country. Just in the short term. Because if you insist on using the special blend, then you run a significant risk of having real supply issues manifest themselves in right around Memorial Day when you least want them to hit.
Jeez. Huh. What could go wrong? And so any idea, I'm not familiar with how this kind of thing would be processed. You know, I know none of us have been to this exact party before, but how quickly could any of these executive orders, you know, turn anything around? If you had one, like if you could say, okay, do this one right now, and it would make the most impact, what would that be?
It would be right now. I would suspend the low carbon fuel standard,
okay,
and I would suspend the California special blend. That's the immediate.
Immediately.
It would be for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days. It's not something that would last for years and years and years, right? But I think if you're looking at, if these numbers are correct, and we don't have any issues that they wouldn't be correct, okay, but they're models, and, you know, no model's perfect. Like, change an assumption, and, you know, the numbers change, right? But if we're looking, you know, the way we look at this, we're saying, look, you know, if I'm a policymaker, and I'm really worried about jet fuel, and I'm really worried about gasoline, and I'm worried about keeping the economy going, and I'm really concerned about national security, then I may want to consider this special blend as being number one. And then the next on the list, I would bring up our executive order suggestion to increase onshore production in Los Angeles, Ventura, Monterey counties, Santa Barbara County. Onshore production for that, and that would, you know, that would involve the federal government completely nullifying SB 1137, which is the setback rule, and things like that. So we'll see where this goes.
Well, if we increase the oil production, do we have the capability of refining it?
Well, that was one of the other executive orders that we identified. So we actually built a blueprint for Washington to consider with the Valero refinery. We said, look, here's one design you might want to consider with the Valero refinery. We could enter into an agreement with Valero, we being the United States federal government, to lease that asset for 7 to 10 years. Valero would operate it. The government would put money in it to bring it back up to speed and spec. But the production out of that refinery would be directed towards U.S. military use into the state of Nevada.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it sounds like there might be some solutions if we can get the right people to act on it.
Wow. Any indication on whether or not they'll do it?
That I can't really comment on.
Okay.
Because I don't have that type of inside information. I can tell you that they've asked us to build out one of those executive orders to a greater level of specificity, but I'm not at liberty to tell you which one it is.
All right. Well, then we will force you all to come back and tell us at a later date.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Fair warning. Fellas, we appreciate you coming on. Stan, Mike, we're going to talk to you on a different day, apparently, and 1 hour is definitely not enough.
I have one comment I'd like to before you go.
Fire.
We could be facing a crisis, and I don't like to cry wolf, but I personally have told my family to not let their gas tank get below a quarter tank and make sure that their pantry is full of groceries.
Good call.
I don't want another COVID. I don't want another COVID. I don't like crying wolf.
No.
It doesn't hurt to be prepared anyway, but that's my comment of the day.
Nice. Well, we're making you come on with us next week.
I totally agree.
The news is going to kick our butt here.
Yeah, that's a great point that Stan brings up. I mean,
all right, we're pushing. The news is going to cut us off here. Sorry, guys. We will put this all out commercial free this afternoon at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.